This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 9th of June 2023. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Farah Williams.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Council ends free nighttime parking. Princess Royal helps to mark memorable day. And M3's missed opportunity. And the first headline story, please, Daphne.
Right. First story is Council ends free nighttime parking. Free overnight parking in Winchester City Centre car parks has been ended by the City Council. From July, an overnight charge equivalent to 2 hours of the daily rate will apply for off-street parking after 7pm and before 8am in central car parks. The increase has been criticised by a leading city restaurateur, Mif Kayum, of Kyoto Kitchen. He said, "This is a really bad decision. Where was the consultation? This is an ill-thought and damaging charge at a time when the nighttime economy and small independent businesses are still recovering from COVID, and last year's turbulent economic challenges will have little benefit for achieving net zero and cause visitors to go elsewhere." Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, approved the proposal in the Decision Day meeting on Monday, June the 5th. Conservative City Councillor Neil Bolton questioned the impact on the city's nighttime economy and whether the changes would benefit the council's net zero target, but all recommendations were agreed. Councillor Bolton said, "It is no surprise that for the first climate emergency decision day after the elections, the Liberal Democrat administration has seen fit to introduce increased parking charges and an overnight parking fee. This represents another inflationary cost to hit customers of Winchester's nighttime economy, when restaurants and bars in the city have been crying out for support and help. The administration looks the other way and introduces evening parking charges." Councillor Lerney highlighted that the decision over parking charges was made months ago. Service lead for Environmental Services, Campbell Williams, said the team had met Winchester BID, or Winchester BID, who understood the reasons for the charges. Overnight prices will apply to Colebrook Street, Cossack Lane, Middlebrook Street, Gladstone Street, Friars Gate, Jewry Street, St Peter's, Tower Street and Guildhall Yard. Meanwhile, parking charges will remain the same in car parks outside the city centre, like Chesil Street, where it is free to park after 6 p.m. and on Sundays. Agreed recommendations include annually reviewing tariffs, working closely with the City Council, honouring concessions to residents until permits expire, and introducing an off-peak season ticket from October. The City Council has started work with the County Council to bring on-street restrictions in line with the car park charging periods. While the City Council waits on a decision from the County Council, it will support residents in the most heavily affected areas with additional concessions to allow them to use city car parks. Dr. Paul Spencer, Executive Director at Winchester Business Improvement District, said, "The introduction of evening parking charges is not ideal for businesses at a time when the cost of living crisis continues to impact customer finances and significant increase in costs from suppliers continue to be a concern. We have expressed this view to the council. We recognise this is part of a wider strategy to address air quality and climate emergency, and that the changes will affect only the most central car parks. Other car parks close to the city will remain free after 5 p.m. and on Sundays."
Princess Royal helps to mark memorable day. Winchester saw one of the biggest military parades in recent times, with more than 500 soldiers marching through the city centre. The Royal Logistic Corps marked the recent conferring of freedom of the city to march down the High Street and parade at the Guildhall, with their Colonel-in-Chief, the Princess Royal, taking the salute under the Royal Standard fluttering above. The Corps also celebrated the 30th anniversary of the formation of the unit in 1993. Around 500 soldiers from the Corps, the largest in the British Army, were accompanied by three bands: the Band of the Royal Gurkha Rifles, the Pipes and Drums of the Royal Logistic Corps, and the Bagpipes of 152 Regiment, Royal Logistic Corps Northern Ireland. Hundreds of members of the public lined the streets to watch the march from Peninsula Barracks. Soldiers had practiced at 4 a.m. that morning after a security sweep ensured the area was safe. As well as serving soldiers, the parade also included veterans, with some wearing bowler hats and others in Chelsea pensioner uniform, and cadets. The Princess Royal arrived in a Chinook helicopter, which flew low over the city centre to mark the event before landing at North Walls Recreation Ground. She inspected the soldiers, stopping to speak to several, as did Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson. Welcoming the Princess Royal, Mayor Angela Clear said it was a special day, strengthening the city's links with the military. She said, "To see over 500 members of the Royal Logistic Corps march through the city to the beat of drums, with swords drawn and bayonets fixed, is a moment of utmost pride for Winchester, and a poignant reminder of the dedication and diligent service that the men and women of the Corps give to this country. It has been a truly memorable day." The Princess Royal paid tribute to the regiment, which played a key role in helping the NHS during the COVID pandemic. She said, "I thank the City of Winchester for honouring the Corps, for recognising it as a highly valued member of your community." Among the civic dignitaries were city and county councillors, the Recorder of Winchester, Judge Angela Morris, Chief Constable Scott Chilton, Chief Coroner Chris Wilkinson, and Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones. And that piece is accompanied by two photos, one of some troops marching down the High Street with indeed bayonets fixed to their rifles and swords out for the officers, And another one showing the Princess Royal next to the Lord Lieutenant, and she's looking very scarily at one of those drawn swords.
Clara, thank you.
Right, M3's missed opportunity. A national park authority is set to submit its objections to the major proposed revamp of the M3 Junction 9. The South Downs National Park Authority, SDNPA, Planning Committee, has concerns over the environmental impact of the scheme. The committee met on Thursday, June the 8th, to discuss a report which will be submitted to National Highways. The roads body estimates that the cost of the whole scheme will be in the region of £190 million to £210 million. In the SDNPA's report, its planners say not enough has been done to mitigate the harm the huge scheme will cause. The director of planning's report said, "The proposal is a missed opportunity to demonstrate how National Highways can help contribute to the government's commitment to nature recovery. The application currently fails to deliver sufficient long-term benefits to the environment within the national park to offset the harm the scheme will cause. Approximately 62% of application boundary for this proposed scheme falls within the national park. The majority of the remaining development area is within the setting of the national park. Of the approximate 68 hectares of land within the national park, approximately 32 hectares would be permanent land taken for the highways works, and an additional 33 hectares would be temporarily taken during the construction period. With traffic particularly heavy between the M3 and the A34, National Highways' stated purpose of the project is to reduce congestion and improve journey times, reduce queuing traffic and delays, and support economic growth by improving the road capacity. In the National Park's written representation about the scheme, it said, "Where the SDNPA differs from the applicant is over the extent to which the detrimental effects to the environment, landscape and recreational opportunities have been moderated, whether the benefits of the scheme outweigh the environmental, landscape and recreational costs very significantly, and whether the scheme will be carried out to high environmental standards and includes measures to enhance the environment. The proposed central temporary construction compound and associated haul roads and access tracks causes significant adverse harm, which is entirely avoidable. It is the SDNPA's view that insufficient consideration has been given to locating the proposed main central compound outside the national park in a less sensitive location. There is another compound, referred to as Badger Farm, located outside the national park, which is and was being used by the Smart Motorway team working in and around Junction 9. The SDNPA considers that the benefits of the scheme have not been proven to outweigh the harm identified to the national park, and then it objects to the DCO application for the reasons given above." And there is a picture of what the new junction should look like with underpasses. I didn't realise it was going to have underpasses, which certainly will be a big building thing, won't it?
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow that with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Bond, Arthur Lee, passed away peacefully at the Mountbatten Hospice after a long illness, aged 82. Faber, Jennifer Mary, Ney Hill, died peacefully at home, aged 94, on Sunday the 4th of June. Johnson, Nay Franklin, Pamela, excuse me, passed away peacefully at her care home in Lower Hutt, New Zealand, on Tuesday, the 30th of May, 2023, aged 95. Lewis Martine Caroline, formerly Hudson, passed away at Basingstoke Hospital on the 14th of May, 2023, aged 67 years. Moulton Sylvia Maud passed away peacefully on the 26th of May 2023 at Northlands Care Home Southampton, aged 93. White David Owen passed away suddenly at home on Wednesday the 10th of May, aged 71 years. Hurd John Lennon. Friends of John Hurd and family are invited to a service of thanksgiving for his long life. This will take place in the Hospital of St Cross Chapel, Winchester, at midday on Friday the 7th of July. Christian comment has been written by Moira Redmond this week. The title is Spreading the Word. Thank you, Daphne.
I have a friend who cheerfully asks people, "Are you going to heaven?" Most people, whatever their beliefs or non-beliefs, will shuffle around at this question and at best say weakly, "Well, I hope so." But my friend says, "That's not enough. I am certain that I am going to heaven because Jesus Christ died to save me." These are strong words, and they may silence or disconcert other people. But what an amazing faith. She doesn't think or hope, she knows. Would you find that conversation difficult to have? We've just had Pentecost at church, followed by Trinity Sunday. These are the liturgical times that mark the start of the Christian mission, the official founding of the Church. Trinity Sunday is the time to take a difficult concept. Is it three? Is it one? What does that mean? And grasp it and find that it's not that hard and that it all comes down to love. And then it is the time when we try to remind ourselves that our job isn't just to live good lives, keep the commandments and be nice to each other. Our job is to tell as many people as possible about the joys of Christianity, and this is evangelisation. If we're honest, we know that that is what puts other people off from Christianity, that right there. They just go on about it, the God squad. They just try to suck you in. They won't leave you alone. People want to scurry away from the person full of joy. Christians are happy-clappy. They smile too much. But most Christians won't argue with that description. They would say, "What's wrong with being happy?" Of course, not all Christians are full of joy all the time, and non-Christians can be full of joy too. But with all that, the reason Christians try to tell you about their religion is because they think it's fabulous, because they think it has changed their lives, that it is the best way to live, that it makes them happy and helps them put up with the difficulties the world sends their way. We know it can be embarrassing or cringe-making for people hearing us, but we can't help it. Before the Holy Spirit descended at Pentecost, the disciples were huddled in an upper room. Jesus had gone back to heaven at the Ascension, and they were living in fear and uncertainty. But then they were given the gift of the Holy Spirit. Tongues of fire appeared above their heads, and they found they could speak in all languages. They were inspired. They were galvanized. They finally understood their mission, and they went out into the world to spread the gospel. If you've ever tried to convert someone else to your favorite music, or football team, or author, try to think of it like that. If a person genuinely believes their religion is a great force for good, a force that could help everyone, then it would be selfish to keep it to yourself. You absolutely should be telling other people about it. And all we are asking from other people is that maybe they will listen. And that comes from Moira Redmond.
Thank you, Daphne. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off, please, with Pothole Hell?
I certainly can. After a lifetime of dedicated service to education in Hampshire, I decided to sell my saloon car and invest part of my lump sum in a small Mercedes sports car with retractable roof. How I regret that decision. Today, in the warm sunshine, my wife and I drove off into the highways and byways of Hampshire to enjoy the outstanding and beautiful countryside. The scenery along our river valleys, over our chalk downs and through our ancient forests is truly wonderful. Could I enjoy it? No, I could not. With my eyes totally engaged on the road ahead, I zigzagged around pothole after pothole and twice was caught unawares. The impact shook us both to the core. The alloy wheels of my pride and joy are wrecked. Driving in Hampshire is no longer a pleasure. It has become the necessity of getting from A to B along the least hazardous roads. Last year, we holidayed in Spain, where the roads were immaculate and properly constructed. How we miss that EU money. Driving in Australia, in Vietnam, in France, Italy and Germany is joyous. Not so in the prosperous south of England. Hampshire, as a local authority, appears to have lost its grip on standards and quality of service. Political leaders and managers have to confront the problem and do something about it before we all descend into the abyss of an extremely deep pothole. We, as council taxpayers, were not getting value for money. There is too much laissez-faire and acceptance of the third rate and not enough determination, expectation and hard graft. Yours in exasperation, Bob Sprague, Lakewood Road, Chandler's Ford.
And the second letter is headed Hosepipe Ban. He says, I'm sure many of us have been enjoying the sunny weather, perhaps another example of climate change. But I suspect bad news in the offing. A hosepipe ban? I wonder how much money has been invested in water storage by Southern Water. We all know this country does not have a shortage, but as we have already seen this year, some months can be very wet. Linked to water companies is the atrocious way sewage is dumped in our rivers when there is high rainfall. 50 years ago, in my first job in technical support of a dairy in Cheshire, I was asked to look at exactly this issue, peak effluent loads. There was a simple and not very costly solution. We put in a balance tank, allowing the existing treatment plant to work 24/7 without overload. But then I suppose my company then cared about the environment. Nuff said. And that comes from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And now a letter that's a complete change of direction. It's headed Kids at Risk. More children are at risk of sexual and criminal exploitation this summer as families struggle to afford activities during the school holidays and children spend more time online. At Barnardo's, we polled just over 700 children and 1,000 parents across Great Britain. We found that due to the ongoing cost of living crisis, almost half of all those parents surveyed said they would struggle to afford family holidays and days out. One in five said they wouldn't be able to afford time off work to spend with their children. 7 out of 10 children surveyed said they will spend more time online during the upcoming school holidays than during term time. And 1 in 10 children said they already communicate with people they have met online but don't know in person, with 8% saying they will meet with people they have met online this summer. The holidays can trap some children in harmful situations with no one to turn to. With the cost of living crisis continuing to push families into poverty, we fear that even more children will be vulnerable to sexual and criminal exploitation. Being a victim of sexual or criminal exploitation has serious long-term impacts on children's lives. It's vital that children receive specialist support to help them recover. But too many are already being failed by a lack of specialist support nationwide. Last year, Barnardo's supported more than 6,000 children through our child abuse and exploitation services. But we know there are many more who desperately need help. The government must invest in nationwide access to help, such as therapy and counselling, so that all children experiencing abuse and exploitation have the best possible chance to recover and rebuild their lives. We are calling on readers to sign our petition, which calls on the government to ensure that no child is left without specialist support after being exploited. And that comes from Emma Bowman, Barnardo's Director of Children's Services. It doesn't actually give anything about the petition itself, so there we go.
Danny Chambers has written in about dogs' dismay. In my capacity as a veterinary surgeon, I am compelled to express my thoughts, not as the Liberal Democrat candidate for MP, but as a professional dedicated to animal welfare. The government's decision to axe the Kept Animals Bill at the 11th hour is hugely disappointing. I share in the dismay expressed by the British Veterinary Association, the Dogs Trust, and several other organisations that have worked so hard for so long to get this bill over the line. The significance of this bill cannot be understated, as it aimed to address critical issues pertaining to animal health and welfare. Consequently, the repercussions on animal welfare of shelving this legislation cannot be overstated. These concerns are far from hypothetical. As a practicing vet, I know it is a common occurrence for dogs with cropped ears, a painful and purposeless mutilation, to be brought into veterinary practices. This cruel procedure is carried out in the UK and abroad by people with no veterinary training and merely serves to create an aesthetic image associated with certain breeds. The bill also included measures to tackle the alarming rise in puppy smuggling, particularly from Eastern Europe. This not only poses a major threat to animal welfare, but also carries public health implications, as the imported puppies can introduce diseases that can infect humans, such as Brucella canis and rabies. Dog attacks on livestock cause distress to farmers, anguish to the animals involved, and cost the farming industry over £1.8 million a year, a figure that has been rising year on year. The pandemic led to a surge in puppy prices, which has also led to a significant increase in the theft of pet dogs. Under current law, pets are viewed merely as a property with a monetary value. However, this bill aimed to address this issue by advocating for sentences that acknowledge the emotional impact such thefts have on both animals and their owners, highlighting the unique bond shared between them. It is disheartening to witness one of the few potential opportunities presented by Brexit being squandered with respect to tightening our national biosecurity and regulating the import of animals. And that letter, as I say, is from Danny Chambers, BVSC, MSC, MRCVS, the Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate for Winchester.
This letter comes from someone who has had an unpleasant encounter. On Friday, June the 2nd, on returning from a shopping trip in the town, as I approached the upper wooden bridge that traverses the River Itchen on Water Lane, I noticed a gathering of some four adults, accompanied by a gaggle of infants, under five, including pushchairs, at the exit of said bridge. Thinking they were politely awaiting for me to pass, as I had a walking stick and somewhat struggling to negotiate an overladen shopping trolley, I was unexpectedly approached by a very rude and sarcastic woman brandishing a leaflet showing me an image of the Holy Bible, saying, "This is a very old book. It's called the Bible. Have you ever heard of it?" Somewhat angered by the assumption of my perceived ignorance, and obviously being a white British person living in a Christian country, I found her comment somewhat insulting. I thus politely pointed out to her I did not like being solicited by strangers in the street, realizing they were laying in wait to pounce. In response to my comment, she then saw fit to openly mock me in front of her colleagues, calling me, sarcastically, darling, citing she was just being friendly. Friendly? I think not, as at this point I indeed felt harassed, alarmed, and distressed. Is this not a public order offence? Previously I had also been randomly stopped in the street by these blood-phobic gang of intimidates asking my name and where did I live. Disgraceful behaviour. One question I would care to ask these invasive people is, given the chance word edgeways, etc., if their God is the all-powerful, omnipresent, holiest deity they profess, why does it require their unpleasant assistance? And that is name and address supplied.
And here's a short letter from Ralph Perrett, who is aged 11. And he writes, in response to the letter from Simon Lever in the Chronicle, May the 25th, the solar farm on the A34 is not necessarily destroying the countryside. The methods of farming which may have been used before the solar farm was built were probably not very environmental. Many solar farms have grass and sheep between the solar panels. The grass is a habitat for wildflowers, butterflies, and many other insects. In the Carbon Almanac, that's a Penguin business book, page 171, it says it takes solar panels only 15 months to produce enough energy to offset their carbon cost of construction. The information in the book was sourced from research by the National Renewable Energy Lab. And Ralph lives at Dover Close, Oresford.
And now I've got a letter from Simon Lever about something else. No deterrence. Once again, a non-custodial sentence has been handed down to a violent thug who brutally strangled a woman. Chronicle, June the 1st. There is no surprise that the victim wept and family were distraught when hearing such a weak sentence for such a thug. Non-custodial sentences do not act as an example or deterrence for violent thugs. Further, there is clear evidence that criminals released early or delivered non-custodial sentences continue to break the law. From Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
This comes from Roy Wilcock of West Yorkshire. It's an appeal for information on a World War II connection. He says, I'm the senior research editor for aviation website Air Crew Remembered. I'm researching an Australian pilot who was killed during the Second World War. In his service file are several references to Mrs. Myra Chichester and her husband Marcus, who, according to letters in the pilot's service file, were most kind to him during his time in the UK. In trying to determine the airman's connection with the Chichesters, I came across the Hampshire Chronicle online article of April 25th, 2022, Spy Alert Sparked by a Hampshire Teenage Girl, in which Jane Chichester recalls her life at Lichfield Grange during the war, and that free French soldiers and Australian pilots stayed there, resting from hostilities. I'm interested in discovering more about this kindness extended by Mr. and Mrs. Chichester and what it entailed. I will appreciate any help or advice that you might be able to offer which would help me in my quest. And that's from Roy Wilcock, Cleckheaton, West Yorkshire, and he gives an www.aircrewremembered.com or roywilcock@talktalk.net.
And that's all the letters we have this week. If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment. First person, letter from Westminster and Belgarum. The editor heads up her article this week with End to Free Evening Parking Mean-Spirited. She writes, the City Council's decision, approved on Monday by Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, Councillor Kelsey Learney, to end free evening and overnight parking in city centre car parks is rather mean-spirited. There has never been a charge for people parking after 6 p.m. until now. From July, an overnight charge equivalent to 2 hours of the daily rate will apply for off-street parking after 7 p.m. and before 8 a.m. in central car parks. The increase has been criticised by a leading restaurateur, Miff Kayum, of Kyoto Kitchen, as ill-thought-out and damaging. Conservative City Councillor Neil Bolton questioned the impact on the city's nighttime economy. One has to wonder that if someone is driving into Winchester to pay upwards of £50 for a meal for two, whether they will be deterred by a £2 charge. The real impact will be on people who live in the city centre and park their cars in those central car parks overnight, arriving home after 6 p.m. and then leaving in the morning before 8 a.m. Of course, anyone who can afford to run a car can probably afford to pay the £2 charge. But that's not the point. It's rather mean. Kimberly Barber writes about conversations with a princess in first person this week. Here's Daphne.
As hundreds of soldiers marched through Winchester last week, it was hard not to feel immense pride in our city. Not only did the Royal Logistic Corps do the city proud with their immaculate uniforms and impeccable parading, the sun shone as if summer might finally be here, and the streets were lined with residents all keen to share in the moment. Families looked on eagerly to see loved ones, small children waved Union flags left over from the coronation, and one woman had even brought a bouquet of flowers. A Chinook flew overhead, and then minutes later, royalty emerged onto the Broadway in front of the Guildhall, with Princess Anne, the regiment's colonel-in-chief, coming to inspect the troops. The event was being held to mark 30 years of the Royal Logistic Corps being in Winchester, as they were granted freedom of the city by the council. After the inspection, the crowds packed out Winchester Cathedral for a service of thanksgiving before returning for a private reception in the cathedral grounds. The event was just perfect. Smart, proud soldiers hosted the guests as the princess made her way around the room. She was wonderful, stopping and speaking to everyone there. Usually, I'm in the background, notepad in hand. However, the opportunity to meet one of my most admired royals was too much, and when she approached my station, I stayed put for her to talk to me. Everyone introduced themselves, and I told her proudly that I was the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle, a great supporter of Worthy Down, and that the last time we met was more than 16 years ago, when I was in the first year of a media and journalism course at Highbury College. She listened and said, "You stuck with it then?" And my admiration for her grew immensely. It was a great moment, and one which I proudly sent to all my family on WhatsApp later. My daughter was most enamoured when I told her I had met an actual princess. Aurora, Ariel and Moana, move over. I know a real-life one. I watched as the Princess Royal greeted every single person in the room, making everyone feel special, and in turn making an already wonderfully momentous occasion for the Royal Logistics Corps and for Winchester even more magical and memorable. And there's a small photograph with that of Princess Anne looking extremely elegant in pale blue with a wonderful grey hat. She looks very, very elegant, and she's talking to Kimberly Barber.
It's the turn of the Winchester MP, Steve Brine, to pen a few words for us this week. Nick has the letter from Westminster.
The issue of water quality and combined storm overflows, CSOs, has shot up the agenda in recent years. As a result, I have worked really hard to educate myself and in turn I hope constituents when they get in touch about the subject. If it were easy, CSOs, combined storm overflows, would never have been a thing in the first place. So anyone who tells you it's a simple fix is deceiving you, and I think most reasonable people know that. Also, and I find very few people genuinely know this, it's essential to understand why overflows are not simply switched off by ministerial decree. It all goes back to a Victorian sewage system which was never built for this level of development or indeed rainfall. The government could have ignored the subject, but we decided to face it and set about turning things around, starting with proper monitoring so we know the extent of the problem. That is the issue, and therefore opportunities for our opponents, but that's a serious business of government, not the luxury of opposition. The Storm Overflow Discharge Reduction Plan, brought about by the Environment Act I voted for, requires water companies to make their largest infrastructure spend in water company history to increase capacity. It is backed by up to £56 million capital investment. The Environment Agency and Ofwat have launched the largest ever criminal and civil investigations into wastewater treatment works, and we've dramatically increased funding for the Environment Agency inspections via the Plan for Water. Wet wipes will be banned. Sounds like a trivial issue, doesn't it? But the UK uses 11 billion of them each year, and they block sewers and harm waterways, increasing. And this spring, the Secretary of State announced the storm overflow target will be enshrined in law. Last year, I visited Southern Water's water treatment works at Morstead Lane to really understand how the wastewater process works. And I visited Thruxton, near Andover, to see how their Pathfinder project is pioneering a way to tackle groundwater infiltration into sewer systems. I'm staying close to Southern Water to understand how they are interpreting the Environment Act and urging them to go faster. No one is pretending this is easy. Did you know before 1997 the poo barge was sailed out to sea, which is how we disposed of foul water? Our Victorian sewage system combines storm groundwater with that produced by toilets, dishwashers and bathtubs. Without a discharge, it would literally come back up your loo and plug hole. We want to change that, which is why we're facing up to the problem and acting. That is painstaking work, but I'd rather be part of the solution than carping about the problem from the sidelines with uncosted games that get us nowhere. Far from ignoring the situation, the government are taking it extremely seriously and taking action to provide better water quality in this country. You can find more on this and links to all I've mentioned here at stevebryne.com/factorfake-waterquality.
Well, Garum has come up with two little pieces this week from an alternative point of view. Tell us more, Vara, please.
Yes, the first one is accompanied with a photograph of a father and daughter. And it's got underneath it, oh no, it isn't, sorry, I'm awfully sorry, it's a father, it's a husband and wife.
Oops.
Yes, well, she looks very young. Sorry about that. Robert Beckford and his wife Jennifer. He's a University of Winchester academic. He's turned a long-running argument with his wife about the Windrush generation into a BBC Radio 4 series. Professor Robert Beckford, director of the university's Institute for Climate and Social Justice, has made the programme Windrush, A Family Divided, with his wife Jennifer. Both Robert and Jennifer are of Caribbean descent. Robert's family coming to Northampton in the 1950s, while Jennifer, the daughter of a diplomat, arrived in the UK in the 1970s as a teenager. He takes the positive position on Windrush, while Jennifer takes the opposing view. While Robert has been making programmes for the BBC and Channel 4 for 25 years, Jennifer is new to broadcasting. Robert explains, "This is based on a genuine family argument which we have been having on and off ever since we've been married. This is not unique to our family. This is debate that most Caribbean families have but don't make public. I got fed up with rowing over the dinner table and thought, why don't I pitch this to the BBC as a programme idea? And the first part of Windrush, A Family Divided, went out on June the 5th at 11 a.m. So perhaps one can find the second part. And as well as that, there is Peal of Bells for Freedom Parade. Winchester people may have noticed the unusual peal of bells at Winchester Cathedral last Thursday. It coincided with the end of the service in the cathedral last Thursday lunchtime following the Freedom Parade by the Royal Logistic Corps. The regiment was celebrating its 30th anniversary and the granting of freedom to the city to the regiment by the City Council. And there's a photo, it says the photo, by Cathedral Bellringer Colin Cook, shows members of the Army Guild of Bellringers, led by their ringing master, Lieutenant Colonel Nicola Roberts, who rang the cathedral bells after the service. I had no idea there was an army guild of bell ringers. Mm. And there are over a dozen of them.
Well, there you are. I didn't know about the bell ringers. Mm. Nick, did you know?
Yeah, that's a new one on me.
Yes. Right, let's take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. First of all, we've got Coronation Singer for City Concert. A baritone who sang at the coronation of King Charles III will be bringing his classical choir from London to Winchester next month. Sam Evans, who performed with the Monteverdi at the coronation last month, and led an international media campaign to reverse the BBC's decision to scrap the BBC singers. He and the Harrow Choral Society, which he directs, will be taking to the stage at the United Church in Jewellery Street. The admission to the concert on Saturday, July the 15th, is free, with donations being shared between the church and the charity Link to Hope. The Winchester performance is titled Music for a Summer Evening and will last approximately an hour, starting at 5:30. Sounds nice. And a few other local events of various sorts. On Sunday the 11th of June, there's a craft makers market at 10 a.m. with lots of local makers of over various things, over 25 tables, and that's at the Worthy Sports and Social Club in King's Worthy. On Tuesday the 13th of June, A Midsummer Night's Dream. Well, it's nearly midsummer, isn't it? This is on at 7:30 on the 13th and 14th of June. Award-winning Flabbergast Theatre returned to Winchester at the Theatre Royal, Jewellery Street. Tickets are £15 for that one. And, oh, here's fun. On Saturday the 17th of June, there's a Festival of Toy Trains at 10:30 a.m. There's going to be over 20 vintage model railway layouts and 70 plus sales tables selling old and new toy and model trains. And that's at Perrins School, Pound Hill, Alsford. That's something different. And on the same day, Saturday the 17th, there's a Jane Austen guided walking tour. A walk to explore Jane Austen's Winchester. It starts from the Guildhall at 2:30 p.m. And a couple of other little bits. There's St. Cross Fete is on Saturday the 24th of June. Starts at 1:30 at St. Cross Hospital. The Kingsgate Voices Bird Song, B-Y-R-D, Bird Song. A concert of unaccompanied choral music ranging from Bird and his contemporaries to Gershwin and Whiteacre. That's at St. Paul's Church in St. Paul's Hill, Winchester. That's at 7 p.m. on Saturday the 24th, and tickets for that are £15. And a little bit of nostalgia. There's a Fab 40s garden party on Sunday the 25th of June. It's a Rotary Club charity event, and it says, come along to this charity event which will take you back all the way to the fabulous 1940s with music from the Fifinellas, dancing and more. And that's at the Concord Club in Eastleigh. And finally, Lionel Richie is bringing a spectacular open-air concert to the Broadlands Estate in Romsey. It's on Tuesday the 26th of June. It says it's at 1 a.m. I rather think that would be 1 p.m. one in the afternoon. I don't think it would be one in the morning. Tickets are available for that. So we've got a big star coming to the area. We have one extra item that I've been asked to read. It's the touch tour for blind and partially sighted visitors to the cathedral. The cathedral now provides pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour will provide you with a history of the building and the stories of some of those who worked here or who were buried in the cathedral. There will be opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of architecture of the cathedral. Also, you'll be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The recommended maximum size of each tour is 3 visually impaired visitors. Ideally, you should have a companion who will be granted free entry, but one can be provided on request. These tours will take a little over an hour, and afterwards you'll be able to visit the Kings and Scribes exhibition, where there are also many exhibits which you can touch. The next tour that we know about will be on Monday the 17th of July at 11:30. And if a group of up to 3 visually impaired people would like to book a tour on another date, there is a number to call. There's 2 ways to book. You can ring the visitor services team on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. Or if you're able to use the internet, you can email visits@winchester-cathedral.org.uk. Now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 10th of June, the sun will set at 9:18 p.m. and on Wednesday the 14th of June, the sun will rise at 4:50 a.m. and will set at 9:21 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, the first one is headed Fears for Tenant Evicted from Council Property. A former councillor has raised concerns over no-fault evictions being used by landlords to gain possession of rented properties in Winchester. Recent Conservative candidate Ian Tate posed the issue to Winchester City Council in a cabinet meeting on Tuesday, May the 23rd. After one of his friends was forced to leave his housing association flat through a Section 21 no-fault eviction. The Section 21 order allows landlords to evict a tenant without having to give any reason with just 2 months' notice. Mr. Tate's friend had to leave his first-floor flat in Sussex Street in the summer and present himself as homeless to the council. Ian Tate said, "Thankfully, he is now securely housed in a council flat in Winchester. However, the whole experience was very traumatic and worrying for him and his family. The old flat remains empty and obviously isn't earning any rental income or, more importantly, housing anyone. I'm very alarmed that a property that is owned by the council could be subject to the use of a no-fault Section 21 order. I'm in contact with the landlord and they tell me they are going to look into this matter. But with the pending changes in the tenancy legislation, I'm assuming that the landlord will not seek repossession using the Section 21 no-fault order. Clearly, it would not be appropriate to discuss a specific case in an open forum. However, I have already flagged up the background details to the council. Therefore, I would be grateful if an assurance can be given that the tenant will not be forcibly evicted from their council-owned property. There is a time urgency for the occupant, who would not want the public exposure of being named. I hope that reassurance can be given by the leader of the council, particularly for a property owned by the council and in his own ward." In response, council leader, Councillor Martin Todd, made it clear that the City Council does not support Section 21. Councillor Todd said, "The Council has a statutory duty to help people avoid homelessness, and we are not supportive of Section 21 grounds possession. I don't know what powers, if any, we have to enforce that on properties we own but have leased out." The council leader concluded that he would talk to the council, to the housing officers, to ensure that Mr. Tate's friend would have better support.
Earlier last post times. Royal Mail has severely cut back its last collection times from most Winchester City Centre post boxes. 9 o'clock in the morning is now the usual weekday collection time for boxes in the city centre, and 7 a.m. on Saturdays. The last collection from the City Cross near the Buttercross on the High Street is 4 p.m, 5:30 p.m. at the former post office on Middlebrook Street, or 6:30 p.m. from the Winchester Delivery Office on Winnell Manor Road. The final collection in the area is 7:30 p.m. from Southampton Mail Centre on Mitchell Way at Eastleigh. The Royal Mail says the changes have been introduced to improve efficiency. The Chronicle approached the Royal Mail for comment, but it has not responded.
Big increase in injuries from e-scooter collisions. An increasing number of people were injured in e-scooter collisions in Hampshire last year. The Department for Transport figures show 94 casualties were recorded by Hampshire Constabulary last year. It was up from 69 in 2021 and an increase from 17 casualties 2 years prior. Hampshire follows the overall trend across the country with a rising number of e-scooter casualties. Last year, there were 1,458 casualties involving e-scooters, up from 1,434 in 2021 and just 484 in 2020. The statistics show there were 12 deaths due to e-scooter collisions. Of them, 11 were e-scooter users and one was a pedestrian. Steve Gooding, director of the RAC Foundation, said, "As the e-scooter trials rumble on, these figures show that the vehicles are in frequent use and apparently all too frequent collisions across the whole country. Real life is very quickly getting ahead of legislation. As ministers ponder the future of these devices, it is important councils are better funded to keep highway surfaces up to scratch, so all road users, not least those on two wheels, don't fall foul of the rash of potholes which remain far too common. Private e-scooters cannot be legally ridden on roads or pavements in the UK, but have become a common sight, particularly in urban areas. Trials of rental e-scooters on roads in dozens of towns and cities across England are ongoing. The figures reveal that e-scooter users made up the majority of those severely or slightly injured, with 1,106 hurt, 76%, while 233 pedestrians were injured, 16%. The remainder were cyclists or occupants of other motor vehicles. A Department for Transport spokesperson said, "Safety is at the heart of our e-scooter trials, and privately owned e-scooters remain illegal to use on the road." The spokesperson explained the department is committed to protecting all road users and is investing £5 billion from 2020 to 2025 to help authorities maintain local roads, with an extra £200 million announced in the budget. They added, "This will help them fix millions of potholes a year and resurface roads up and down the country, making journeys smoother and safer for everyone."
And now a rather nice item about swifts. Their distinctive wheeling and screaming has become rarer in recent years, but now a charity is working with the City Council to boost swifts in Winchester. Hampshire Swifts has installed 18 boxes on flats in Trussell Crescent in Week, home to one of the largest colonies of the bird in the city. Swifts have been in decline, with modern building techniques blamed for the fall in this century. The cost of the new boxes has been met by the City Council. In recent years, strong efforts have been made to reverse the decline, with Hampshire Swifts
lobbying local authorities and developers to install nesting boxes in new properties. Catherine Gale, a trustee of Hampshire Swifts, said the work on Trussell Crescent needed to be replicated across the city and district. She said, "Swifts have declined by 70% in the southeast of the UK, excuse me, including Hampshire, since 1994. This is due to loss of their traditional nest sites in the eaves and roofs of our homes as buildings are renovated, and particularly as plastic soffits and fascias are installed in place of timber. Modern building techniques mean that houses built in the last 25 years or so have none of the gaps or crevices that swifts need to nest in. A major part of our work at Hampshire Swifts is to put up nest boxes to ensure swifts have somewhere to breed. We know from surveys of small areas of Winchester where we have put up swift boxes that numbers of breeding swifts have increased in these streets as a result, but many more nest sites are needed throughout the Winchester area to help swift numbers recover the levels seen previously in the city." Miss Gale added, "We work with Winchester City Council's ecologist, Zoe Keeble, to ensure that when council-owned properties are re-roofed or have their soffits and fascias replaced, the tenants can have our swift boxes installed free of charge to replace the lost nest sites. We are delighted that Winchester City Council also funded all the new swift boxes for Trussell Crescent to ensure that this important swift colony can survive and increase in size. Hampshire Swifts hopes it will not be too long before swifts start using the new boxes in preference to holes in the brickwork." And that's accompanied by a photo of a man at the top of a ladder with a nest box under his arm and a drill, and he's looking very thoughtfully at precisely where he's going to place the box.
Hampshire's role in saving Spanish refugees has been recalled. Tributes have been paid to Hampshire's historic role in providing a safe haven to Basque refugee children. During a commemorative event at Sir Harold Hillier Gardens near Romsey, tributes were paid to Hampshire residents who welcomed 3,862 Basque child refugees from the Spanish Civil War in 1937. It coincides with the year that marks the 85th anniversary of their arrival, accompanied by teachers, assistants and priests on the Habana ship in Southampton on May the 23rd, 1937. The event was organised by the Basque Children of 37 Association UK and included the dedication of an oak tree to the people of Hampshire. A floral tribute was also laid at an adjacent oak tree that has grown from an offshoot of the original Tree of Guernica, which survived the infamous aerial bombing that devastated that town during the Civil War. Councillor Rob Humby, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "The arrival in 1937 to Hampshire of around 4,000 refugee children who were fleeing the horrors of a civil war triggered an extraordinary humanitarian response from local people. Hampshire residents made huge efforts to support the children and adults who accompanied them. It is important that events like these in Hampshire's history continue to be marked so that they provide a reminder for future generations to come. It's wonderful that two mature oak trees at Sir Harold Hillier Gardens now provide a permanent commemoration of these events. The spirit of hospitality of 1937 still holds true, as in recent times our communities have demonstrated their generosity and humanity once again through the warm welcome offered to Ukrainian arrivals." Carmen Kilner, Secretary of BCA 37 UK, said, "We were thrilled to bring together descendants of the original child refugees, friends, supporters, trustees, members of the association and staff of Sir Harold Hillier Gardens." The BCA 37 UK, representing the children and their descendants, wanted to pay tribute to the people of Hampshire who were the first to give refuge and a warm, generous welcome to the Habana's human cargo. Unfortunately, none of those children who came here those 85 years ago were able to make the commemoration in person. However, we were honoured to have present Benita, one of the children evacuated, not to the UK, but to Russia.
Solar farm opponents outnumber supporters. Plans for a new solar farm in the countryside near Winchester have continued to divide opinion, gaining more than 100 objecting comments. On May the 19th, 53 supporting comments had been submitted, with just 5 against the proposal at Pitt Downs, south of Sarum Road, Sparsholt and Farley Mount. However, on May the 30th, the supporters had gone up to 68 and objectors had jumped to 108. Sparsholt Parish Council is against the scheme, while Hursley Parish Council supports it. Developers Novus and Innova estimate that the solar farm would save 4,054 tonnes of carbon dioxide each year and power around 4,722 homes annually. It would operate for 40 years. The comment from Sparsholt Parish Council said, "Solar farms have a part to play in renewable energy, and we don't dispute how much this would contribute to the need to increase electricity to the grid. However, this application, unfortunately, is proposed to be constructed in too prominent a position and would have too much of a visual impact on the outstandingly beautiful countryside around it. It would have a massive visual impact on the nearby residents, visitors, and local business because of its elevated position in the undulating landscape." The applicant clearly recognises the deeply felt concerns and has proposed a reduced site in mitigation. However, the vandalism of the countryside is akin to daubing the Mona Lisa with acid, and using a bit less acid does not mitigate the damage. The comment from Hursley Parish Council said, "We are aware that the proposal is controversial, and even those in favour of solar often prefer them to be placed on rooftops. However, even using larger roofs or car parks, rooftop solar does not have the efficiencies and economies of scale of a solar farm feeding straight to the grid. This array is relatively small in comparison to others in the district, and grid capacity is limited. Winchester City Council has set an ambitious target to achieve zero carbon, and at parish level, we encourage residents to use low energy solutions."
Ex-journo to release debut thriller novel. A former Winchester journalist has released his first novel set in Hampshire. Author John Quinn has drawn on his experiences reporting in the city in the late 1980s for his debut book, The Reporter, published by Burton Mayo's Books. John said, "The publisher said they loved the book's realism, grittiness and humour, which all comes from working as a journalist in Winchester." The Reporter follows Jude Devlin, a trainee journalist on a Hampshire Free newspaper. Jude uncovers a career-defining story which could bring down the secretive crime family that runs the city and the corrupt senior police officer who protects them. The family decide that if Jude can't be bought off or scared off, he must be got rid of. Like his main character, John worked in the late 1980s on free newspapers in Hampshire,
including the News Extra in Winchester and the Advertiser in Southampton. It was the start of a successful career, with John going on to win the Campaigning Journalist of the Year award whilst at the Mail on Sunday, and later owning Solent News Agency in Southampton. John continued, "It was a different time then, more fun. You made contacts, took them for a beer, got to know them and trust each other. They would tell you what was really happening. Now they'd be fired. These days you have to go through the police's or council's press office and you only get told what they want you to know. But I do realise I sound like an old dinosaur." John is an active member of the Winchester-based Hampshire Writers Society, and he and his wife Sheena are keen golfers at the Royal Winchester Golf Club. The Reporter will be available from June the 16th.
School meal costs hike. Hampshire County Council has made the decision to increase the cost of school meals by 20p per day from June the 5th. The decision has been made in the face of rising costs of ingredients and continued underfunding from the central government, and to avoid losses by the authority's school meal provider, HC3S. The increase will affect a high number of Hampshire's 426 primary schools, as well as 20 secondary schools and 23 special schools that use the HC3S to provide their school catering, as well as parents and carers who pay for school meals. Hampshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Education, Councillor Steve Forster, said, "Increasing the price of school meals was a very difficult decision, as we are acutely aware of the cost of living pressures that continue to face households, and especially so soon after the last increase in October. However, this decision has been unavoidable due to escalating food costs and the anticipated impact of the latest national pay proposal. Government funding has simply not kept pace with these inflationary pressures. We know that families and schools alike are facing rising costs across the board. From our latest round of household support funding, the scheme, which aims to support low-income families and individuals struggling with the cost of food and fuel, we plan to provide funds to schools so they can offer grants at their own discretion to families most in need."
A new home wanted for giant bagpuss. A couple who created a giant bagpuss sculpture for their local scarecrow trail have handed over their model to the highest bidder. Paul and Emma Simmons invited people to bid on bagpuss, with all proceeds going to St Francis Animal Welfare in Fair Oak. The auction ended on Monday evening. The pair, who live on a sanctuary farm in Oslebury, spent 4 days making the much-loved children's TV series Cat, with Paul putting his woodwork trade to use while Emma did most of the sculpting and spray painting. At 1.7 metres in height and width, the husband and wife team had to get a horse box to transport the scarecrow to its spot near St Andrew's Church in Oslebury, where Bagpuss was one of 39 scarecrows in the kids' TV character trail on display throughout May half term. Paul, 47, said, "We were so chuffed. The result was fantastic. It was definitely bigger than expected. We've had a brilliant response with lots of people, without knowing that we made him, saying that Bagpuss was their favourite." Along with the giant straw cat, the highest bidder received the accompanying mice. However, last Thursday, one of the three mice, referred to as the gluing mouse, was stolen and is yet to be found. Paul added, "It did taint it a little bit, and was the talk of the village for a while. But we repositioned the two remaining mice, and it hasn't taken away from the experience. We're animal lovers. We've helped St. Francis Animal Welfare before, and they're doing great work, and they deserve all the help they can get. The winning bid was £200 from an Oslebury resident who has gifted Bagpuss to Osborne School in Winchester. And there's a photograph of him. He's absolutely wonderful. He is enormous, almost as tall as the makers, the husband and wife on either side of him, and gorgeously pink and white striped. He's exactly like Bagpuss.
The next item is headed Rare Triplets at the Zoo, and it is about tamarins. I wasn't sure exactly what they were, but I believe they are a type of primate or monkey. Marwell Zoo has welcomed incredibly rare cotton-headed tamarin triplets. The infants of the critically endangered species were born to first-time parents Gert and Miko on Saturday, May the 6th, and keepers say they are doing well. The arrivals are incredibly rare, not only because there are three of them, but because of their conservation status. It is normal for cotton-headed tamarins to give birth to twins every year in the wild, but triplets like these are very uncommon. It is believed there are currently fewer than 2,000 cotton-headed tamarins left in the wild, and numbers continue to decrease. Amy Denny, primates and small mammals team leader at Marwell Zoo, said, "The primate and small mammals team are absolutely thrilled with the birth of our cotton-headed tamarin triplets who were born overnight. Their arrival has been long anticipated by the team, who moved the breeding pair into their brand new habitat just before the Easter holidays," she added. Cotton-headed tamarins are one of the world's most endangered primates, suffering from the effects of habitat loss and illegal capture for the pet trade in their native tropical forests of Colombia. During the next few months, the triplets will gradually gain independence and will be cared for and carried by both parents.
Family favourite sure is hot stuff. The Cheese and Chili Festival returned to Winchester, attracting thousands of hungry and curious attendees to the North Walls Recreation Ground on the 3rd, 4th of June. This family-friendly festival, which is the only UK festival which celebrates chili and cheese, featured a huge range of stalls and attractions for attendees to enjoy. Alongside stalls selling an array of food, there were also fairground rides for children, musical performances, and cookery demonstrations. Chili Ollie Reynolds, who acts as cookery theatre host at the festival and who was also selling wares, said that, despite the name, the festival is far more than just cheese and chili. Calling the festival both family and budget friendly, he said, "We've got a Punch and Judy show going on, you've got cookery and theatres, there was a magician earlier on, story time, face painting, everything." However, the star of the festival was the chili eating competition. Taking place on Saturday at the festival's main stage, the competition saw six contestants progress through several rounds, eating increasingly spicy chilies, before ending in a race-off, where the final competitors would have to be the first to finish a specially prepared spicy gherkin. This year's victor was Ray Sunny Gerard, who travelled from Southampton to enjoy the festival. He said, "I feel like I'm burning inside.
I think so.
Last time I did it, I finished second. At least this time, I won." Simon Stewart, who organises Cheese and Chili Festival at venues across the UK, said, "We're very grateful for the custom, really. We appreciate the support. It is well supported by the community, We get fantastic feedback online from the event, and we're privileged to be given the opportunity. Because the local authority do allow us to come here. They don't have to, and they've done that and supported us since 2015, and we're very grateful.
Royal recognition for service to the community. At a ceremony in Winchester, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire presented awards on behalf of King Charles III. Nigel Atkinson presented four Hampshire residents on this New Year's Honours List with British Empire Medals, BEM. Claire Hobbs from Winchester for services to young people in Hampshire. David Nesbitt from Southsea for services to charity and to the community in Portsmouth. Molly Watts from Southampton for services to literature during COVID-19. Louise Wilders from Petersfield for services to the community in Portsmouth during COVID-19. Wessex Dance Academy manager Claire Hobbs dedicated the award to everyone at the Academy and to the many inspiring young people who, supported by the programme, have been able to shape their lives for the better. Councillor Edward Heron said, "The Academy's value and success would not be possible without the hard work and commitment of the team behind it, who, under Claire's admirable stewardship, have been able to empower so many young people over the years." And there's a photograph of the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, with the four award recipients.
School's young dancers are the stars of the show. Hundreds of dance school pupils took to the stage to put on six packed shows after months of training. Stars Ballet, and that Stars ending in a Z, put on its Magical Memories show on Saturday, May the 13th and Sunday, May the 14th at the Berry Theatre in Hedge End. The show saw 600 pupils aged between 6 months and 13 years perform. And actually, I'm just wondering what sort of dance a six-month-old could do. But as I didn't see the show, I'll never know. Pupils from Westgate School and Winchester Rugby Football Club, as well as locations across Hampshire, took part. And that's accompanied by a really delightful photograph of five little girls with their hair taken up in a classic ballet dancer style, tied high up at the back. And they're wearing sweet little white dance dresses with frilly white tutus and big coral sashes. And they're obviously reacting to something someone has said because they look as if they're giggling about it.
Second hedge fire. Fire crews tackled a hedge fire in Hairstock, the second fire locally in a few days. The fire took place at around 4:40 a.m. on Saturday, June the 3rd, outside a house on Litchfield Road. Firefighters quickly extinguished the flames and left by 5 a.m. The cause has not been identified and it is not currently being investigated as suspicious. It came days after another blaze in Litchfield Road, which destroyed 3 cars on Monday, May the 29th. Police are currently investigating that one as arson. Hampshire Fire Service has not suggested that there is any link between the two hedge fires.
Canine capers and doggy delight. Thousands of dogs and their owners enjoyed a pup-tacular weekend at a festival created especially for our four-legged friends. On June the 3rd and 4th, around 10,000 people and 3,000 dogs descended on Broadlands in Romsey for this year's Dogstival, with plenty of fun for canines and their humans. The aim of the event is to provide activities that dogs can have a go at with their owners, including a barkour playground and a smaller course for puppies to try out. For those that didn't want to be off the ground for too long, there were agility courses for our furry friends to show off their skills. As the sun shone, there were giant splash pools for dogs to launch themselves into the water to chase their much-loved toys and cool down. For others, there were paddling pools to dip their paws in. Many of the festival goers had a go at the Scurry Village, where pedigree working dogs and cockapoos with boundless energy jumped hay bales and retrieved toys hidden in the foliage. Crowds were wowed by the Hampshire Harriers, a flyball team based in the New Forest, which showcased their lightning-fast dogs in the main arena, and some novices even had a go at the canine sport. Stalls with everything to do with owning a dog were also open at the event, alongside local and national charities providing animal advice. One popular area of the festival was the Puppuccino stand, which got tails wagging as dogs waited for their treat of a cup of whipped cream. Mm-hmm. And there are photographs, one of a dog who's obviously just jumped into the pool. There's a little spaniel looking a bit hot and bothered. He's having a rest. And fun and games where a dog is enticed to go through some sort of tunnel.
Oh, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you finish with the recording, please put the memory stick back into the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and of course many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Vara Williams.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye and have a great week.